Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. This month, just for our socios at patreon.com, there's a terrific big interview with Sir Les Ferdinand. He talks in huge detail about his formative season in Turkey with Beşiktaş, chasing a title in Newcastle, guess how that ended, and of course, landing a helicopter on a US military base. But this, for all of you, is a section of that interview during which Les talks powerfully about the late Cyril Regis, racism in football, and what he believes can be done about it. It's not only important, I think it will fascinate you. Our socios get an extra big interview and a mini documentary every month, as well as all of our content advert free. Join us, we need you, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter.
You know, I've been in the game for 30-odd years now, and I think the measure of Cyril Regis is that in those 30-odd years, I've never heard a person say a bad word about him. So as a man, and considering what he went through as a football player, you know, he, for me, at the time of when I was growing up, there wasn't many black players that I used to see on the TV. There was a smidgen of black players that we heard about that played every now and again. You maybe in the reserves, played occasionally, was on the bench, may have come on. But the era of Cyril Regis, the late Laurie Cunningham, or I should say the late Cyril Regis, Laurie Cunningham and Brendan Batson, and I remember George Berry being at Wolves at the time.
Big central defender, right?
Yeah, these were the first guys that I saw playing on a regular basis, week in, week out. And it was the first time in my life I was able to look at something and say football and go, wow, that's perhaps something that I could do. Up until then, I never ever thought that I could be a professional footballer.
Genuinely, honestly.
You get boys who grew up saying, from the day I was whatever, I thought was going to be a professional footballer, or wanted to be a professional footballer. But because it was an industry that I didn't think was available to me, it's very difficult to turn around and go, well, that's what I want to do, because I just didn't think it was available to me. But until I saw those guys play for West Brom and play on a regular basis, it was the first time I ever thought, wow, there might be an opportunity to be a professional footballer here.
Just by seeing it, never mind their excellence, by seeing it, it told you that's something that I can aim at.
Yeah,
simple as that?
You can aspire to, because until then, you know, my parents would never let me go to football. You know, and I won't just put it down to...
Even at QPR?
Even at QPR. My parents would never, ever let me go to a football game. My parents came to this country in the 60s when it was about skinheads and teddy boys and all that. So my granddad and my uncles and all those people got into loads of fights just because they were black. Now, football was, back in that era, seen as a real hooligan...
Certainly in the 70s.
In the 70s,
for sure,
you know, around the globe, we were renowned for hooliganism in this country.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't even say it was a race thing. It was because of that hooligan element.
There was danger.
There was danger for a young kid. And you used to see skinheads and so on and so forth. So my parents were like, that's one place you ain't going. Because we can't guarantee your safety.
They were right, too.
And
so, having grown up in the same area as you.
Exactly.
It was the truth.
Yeah. So I was never allowed to go to football. So, again, it wasn't something that I could go to and aspire to. But once I started seeing on, you know, the likes of Laurie, Cyril and Brendan, I've said on numerous occasions that Cyril Regis was one of my heroes. And if you look at Cyril Regis' game and you look at my game, you know, he came out of non-league football at Hayes the same as I did. And so I always watched Sarah and I thought, that's who I want to model my game on. You know, I saw his power, I saw his pace, and I saw his ability to score goals left, right, headed, and I went, that's who I need to be. And if I have half the career that Cyril's had, then I think I've done well in the game. And so, he was one of my big heroes as a player growing up, and, you know, I used to watch him, I used to idolise him. And I always say those guys were the trailblazers for us. You know, I didn't encounter half of what Cyril, Laurie, Brendan, Clyde Best, even Bob Hazel here at QPR, I didn't encounter half of what those guys encountered. Paul Canova with Chelsea. Now, these guys were the trailblazers for us. And
I'd best probably beyond any of them, because he's playing late 60s in a very high-profile West Ham side at a time when that National Front thing is just beginning to rise and dominate. I mean, I can't speak about it at all, but from what I've learned, what I've been told.
Yeah, and so, you know, Clyde Best, and, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting Clyde Best, and it really was a pleasure, not listening to some of the things that he had to go through,
no,
but just knowing that these people have... you know, blazed a trail for you to follow in a path. I always bow my head and tilt my cap to these guys because what they went through. You know, I know I've gone to Turkey and, you know, and I've gone to different places and I've done different things and I've gone into racist environments, but it's never been as harsh as what those guys suffered.
Could you, looking back, could you have coped if that had been your generation? I have a suspicion, but life.
I'd like to think I would have been able to cope and cope with it as well as them, because as well, what people have to remember is the reactions, because they wasn't only getting it from the supporters, they were getting it from people on the pitch as well. You see people flip now for the most innocuous things, but to imagine someone hurling racial abuse at you on the pitch as well and being able to keep your dignity and your calmness to be able to go out and play the game that you need to play, to score the goals that you need to score, to make sure that your team win. And that's why, that's the part of Cyril Regis that people, Laurie Cunningham and Brendan Bretson, that people don't often talk about what a great player was, but to overcome...
Restraint? Self-restraint?
Yes, self-restraint. Yeah.
So their restraint maybe was just purely professional.
Yeah.
No matter that you've been faced with evil, and not too few people use that word.
Yeah.
When it comes to racism, it's just, you know, it's evil that you're facing.
Yeah.
You can't allow them to dominate you. You're sent off every third game, and then you don't have a career.
Yeah, exactly. And so the restraint that they must have shown, or did show, not must have, did show, to have the careers that they had is somewhat immeasurable. And you sit here sometimes and I think, wow, because I see some of the things that's going on in Europe at the moment, you know, some of the black players going to Europe and stuff that they encounter. And I think, wow, it's nothing compared to what the likes of those guys had.
But it isn't getting better, is it? I thought there was a while whereby it had not been eradicated, but it felt like there had been so much handed down through generations of a change in culture that we were beginning to, if not eradicate it, make it a demonised evil that people could point to anybody who behaved or spoke that way as being automatically, you're in a minority, it's, you know, you're in the wrong, and we will show you that. And now, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, looking back from a distance, it feels as if we've lost ground. It feels as if it's on the rise.
Yeah.
What's your attitude to that, your beliefs in that?
I think... my beliefs in it, I think if you go to the most Premier League games, much better, because you're now seeing a mixture of cultures at games
in the crowd
that's acceptable. But you go into some of these Eastern European places where they don't see black people, and you're just facing the same things that we had in this country 20, 30 years ago. Lack of education, and I don't think the authorities act in the manner that they should to eradicate it. I think a lot more can be done. And if I always say, if you want to eradicate something from anywhere, if you go to the most extreme measures, then you eradicate it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were kicked out of Europe for hooliganism, for that period of time, what did we have to do to get ourselves back into Europe? They took the strongest measure they could against British football and said, right, you're not playing in Europe anymore. We learned how to behave ourselves. So,
including the clubs that hadn't been involved that night, including the administration, which everybody, irrespective of their part on that given night, had to change, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think when we go to FIFA and UEFA and say, right, we know that we hear chanting from this team in this certain competition. I tell you what, if they was to say, right, okay, you no longer play in this competition. Mm. Not that you're playing behind closed doors. You're no longer playing in this competition. You're kicked out of this competition. Mm-hmm. You'll eradicate it. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. You would eradicate if you wanted to. But that's going to the extreme.
This is your big interview. This is your And I'm taking that as a positive and intelligent stance and as an example of how it worked. Is it probably not likely that to get authority bodies making those decisions, there have to be people who understand it, black or ethnic minority people in the Blazers, saying, well, I see that incident as something that we've seen before that we're trying to eradicate, and here's the big decision. You've been warned, you've been fined, and here's the big one now. Because it's impossible to understand why those in authority don't think like you or want to act like you now.
Yeah, because they don't feel it, because they don't understand it. And you're right. You know, we've been speaking about it for a long time now in the Premier League. It's funny because I saw Martin Glynn, who's high up in the FA, and talk about the new procedures behind BME representation at England level. And someone asked me the other day, is this lip service or is this a genuine move towards trying to eradicate this this stuff in this BME stuff in terms of getting more people into the boardroom, getting people into administrative positions, more black managers? And I said, well, lip service, okay, let me explain something to you. In the time of saying that they're going to interview a BME candidate for the next England post when it becomes available, but that person has to have a pro licence, have to have coached at the highest level in the Premier League. I said, so what that tells me, that they're only going to interview Chris Hughton, because there's no other black manager who has those credentials. So yes, it is lip service, because they know that. So if they know that, and you're going to come out and say, well, this is the criteria you need to get the job, there's only Chris Hughton that they're going to be able to interview.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I'm scared of making a fool of myself by saying things that, you know, sound glib. But I ask a straight question. For as little as I understand of the Rooney Rule, which in principle, when you read it and try to understand it, it looks as if it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's come from the NFL.
Yep.
And in essence, it says that it's obligatory that there must always be black or ethnic minority candidates when senior jobs in administration or management or governance come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're grown-ups around this table. We know that you can't govern the mind processes of the people making the decisions in the first place. But Does it make sense if that becomes not just the norm, but the law here in our football, in this football, that gradually people who are either complacent or casually racist or don't even know that they're making racist decisions,
covert,
when they get an opportunity to speak to somebody who's been put on a list because it's obligatory, and then they look and go, oh, that's the right candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I being too simplistic, or is there a possibility that gradually the gates of opportunity are opened that way?
Well, I don't think you're being simplistic. I think you're being... It's pretty clear that is the way forward, because if you look at how the Rooney Rule came to existence and the way it transformed what they were doing in NFL was because of that same reason, that they gave someone an opportunity to interview. And he may not have got the job, but the next owner of this franchise talking to the next owner of the franchise, well, bloody hell, I interviewed blah blah, and I tell you what, I was really impressed with him. He's worth interviewing. So all of a sudden you're getting through to an interviewing process. At the moment, the whole problem is we're not even getting to an interviewing process, because especially in the Premier League, the club know the next managers before they've sacked the one they've got, mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10. So there's no interviewing process. But if you make it obligatory that you have to, then you may get a candidate come through the door, and he may be that impressive. You know, I remember sitting down with Daniel Levy and talking about one of the managers that he interviewed for one of the jobs at Tottenham. And it's not probably right to say his name, but he interviewed him, and he said, when I looked at his presentation, he said, at the time I wasn't thinking I was going to give him a job, but when I looked at his presentation and the way he spoke to me, he sacked him. And then he said to me afterwards, he said, I've got to be honest, if he came in with the same presentation and the way he spoke to me, I'd probably give him the job again. Do you know what I mean? He was that impressive. And so what we're talking about is just getting an opportunity to come through the door and being able to sit down and have a conversation and say, well, this is my ideas. This is what I think I can do for your football club. You may not get the job, but it just gives you an opportunity to put your case forward.
If we go back to when I remember, although not growing up in a community where there were a lot of... you know, people from different cultures, different colour skins. It just was where I grew up, it wasn't. Mm. So therefore, when I first heard people talking about Viv Anderson as he broke through and made his England debut, and I heard some of the things that people said on television, which they weren't intended to be a put-down, but they were ridiculous. Mm. Wait till the winter comes, muddy pitch, whatever.
Yeah.
And from that to now, talent has meant that when you're buying footballers, you know... colour has no, he's no bias, only about the search for talent is so hungry that you sign whoever's got the ability. With that diffusion of successful black footballers, how is it even possible that in that merry-go-round where you always kind of know, why aren't people stepping off and saying, well, this fella has got exactly the same CV, background, I saw in him, these words that you say about white footballers, I saw in him on the training ground when he was only 27 the ability to lead and teach. What's different about black players?
I always think when you look at the interviewing process, people say to me, you know, you've made it into the boardroom. I said, yeah, but my owners are from an ethnic minority background. And I said, and look, when you look at places like the FA and you look at well-established establishments where these guys work, I said, go a generation from them and their families were being served by black people. Their families were being served by an imp. So you're not going to change their mindset. They don't see you on the same level as them. My kid's coming through. Your kid's coming through. My kid's kid's coming through.
They don't see colour.
They don't see colour.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when my son comes home with his friends, they're Indian, they're Chinese, they're white, they're black. Yeah. There's a mixture of friends that he comes, and they all go out together. They will change the mindsets of the people that go into the next boardrooms. I ain't going to be able to do it, unfortunately. I can do my part, what I do now, and hopefully show people that there is an opportunity. And I think a lot of the with the role that I'm playing at the moment, a lot of footballers come out of football and think, I don't know the academia side of what goes on in this part when you come across the other side of the wall. But I say, but the people that are the CEOs and... you know, chairman and all that, they have expertise in other businesses, and most of them are university educated.
Probably.
95%, 98% of footballers don't come from a university background, they come from working class families. So we struggle a little bit with the academia, but we can learn that. But what those people can't learn is what we did out on a football pitch.
Nailed it.
And so we shouldn't be frightened to want to say, right, we're going back into education to educate ourselves. Because, listen, I don't know everything I needed to know about contracts and everything when I came in. But I'm learning. I'm learning very quickly. And that's where, you know, I think some footballers will come out and say, right, yeah, I want to go into that administrative side.
Recently with Brewster at Liverpool, who did a brilliant interview with The Guardian and Annie Lucas, it seems to me that the FA is where the focal point of change needs to happen, and they don't want to change, so we're stuck in this cycle about, no, we're doing the best we can and all that. You know, it's... Would you go there in the right circumstances? If there comes a time when they go, okay, we accept that we have to change and we can't change it ourselves, would that attract you? Have you got the desire to be the guy who sets new standards from within, not from within the game, but from within the FA?
If I could help, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Because, a lot of the things that go on is like you said, the Luko case. It's only because of miseducation and misunderstanding. You know, who's doing the process of the due diligence on what happened? How does that person feel to what's happened? How do they know how Aluko felt? Just making it up as they go along.
Mm.
And then realising at the end of it, oh, well, we've done this wrong. So now we have to make changes.
I'm not here enough, and I'm also not smart enough to know whether we're actually at a moment of change. But it feels like we could be at a pivotal moment. Mm. You know, one of the things that excites me a lot, you have talked a great deal before and here about seeing Brendan Batson and Laurie and Cyril. And for a long time, England football teams can't play football.
Mm.
And now, double world champions, runners-up at European Championship level, there's a generation coming through. You know, a pass and a technical, and they've won tournaments and things that England players have been good enough to do.
Mm. Haven't done in the past.
But haven't done in the past. And if you look at the makeup of their team, 70% ethnic minorities that are different from, you know, kids that maybe you grew up with and your dad, I grew up with mine. And that is setting a chain of, there's a little Les Ferdinand sitting watching that team, mm-hmm. you know, that took Spain apart in the World Cup final, thinking, boy, that's me.
Yeah. And it's funny, though, because I think it was 56% BME representation on the pitch. But when you pan to the bench, there wasn't one.
I didn't know that.
There wasn't one. In both teams, there wasn't any BME candidate.
In terms of coaching, you're talking about?
Coaching.
I see.
Physio. You know, because it's, you know, when you look at a bench, it's not always just the
true. There's
the
a coaches
group,
there's
on
a team,
there's a group, there's a team, there's the doctor, there's the physio, there's all sorts of people on that bench. And when you pan to the bench of all them celebrating, there was no one of it.
Same old, same old.
Exactly.
Now I hope and believe you enjoyed that little free excerpt. For the full interview, head to patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Do it now. Sign up and you'll unlock all our archive interviews. And every month in 2018, we will be producing a mini documentary exclusive to socios, exclusive to members. It's the best deal in town, baby.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.